With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Alex.
And this is Matt.
And this is a very special episode of Six Seasons and a Podcast because I have Matt from Communities with me. And for those who don't know, the reason why this is kind of extra special is Matt and I host the AP Bio Rewatch podcast together. And you say, what does that mean, Alex? Why is that a big deal? Because our guest not only wrote for Community, but also for AP Bio, where she also served as co-executive producer. So if you're, you know, trying to do your mental math, Emily Cutler is the name that you're searching for.
Ooh.
Emily Cutler's, yeah. Emily Cutler's credits include Fresh Off the Boat, The Odd Couple, Growing Up Fisher, Suburgatory, Keep On Going, look at her IMDb after this or during this. And either way, Emily Cutler, welcome to Six Seasons and a Podcast.
Thank you for having me. This is very exciting.
Yoo-hoo, yes.
Woo-hoo. And a big day and very exciting.
Yes. Super great to meet you through our friend
Charlie.
You mean Coach Charlie? Charlie.
Yeah, Coach.
He's wonderful.
Yes, he was so great to come on AP Bio Rewatch podcast, and he made a connection with you, and so thank you to Charlie for doing that, and thank you Emily for being here.
I'm thrilled.
You know, I normally start off with just early childhood memories of TV because I think it's, you know, fun to kind of, you know, what
sure.
made imprints on your life to, you know, influence your TV writing.
I'm dating myself a little bit, but I will say I was glued to I Love Lucy. I was glued to the Carol Burnett Show, even when they were in reruns. I was very, very influenced by those two women. And I watched everything else. I watched Family Ties. I watched The Love Boat. I watched Fantasy Island. I mean, I watched pretty much everything I could watch. But in terms of comedy, I could pretty much recite every I Love Lucy episode.
Those are some quintessential TV.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah. What about the women that stuck out to you? What, you know, what about that, you know, is,
I think that's just where I learned comic timing. And also these were women that weren't afraid to look dumb and really, really go for a laugh. Now you see a lot of, comedians very concerned, not comedians, but actresses very concerned about how they look and how they're perceived. And these were women who just wanted to get the laugh and were willing to do whatever they had to do to get it. And I just loved it. I loved that Carol Burnett was doing sketches and doing characters. And I just remember watching them and knowing that I was seeing something very special. And Mary Tyler Moore and, you know, Valerie Harper as Rhoda. I mean, I watched all those women. It was really, that was kind of the start of my comedy. And then got into things like Bill Cosby and all that kind of stuff. God bless him. And I mean, I watched everything. And I remember Love American Style. That's probably dating me. In terms of influence, I would really have to say it's I just think of Lucy. I think of Lucy and Carol Burnett mostly.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting when we get into Community talk about Britta and the women on the
yes.
show. I'll be curious to get into that, how that influences, you know, taking care of those women as you're writing and, you know, influencing the men in the room, and how do we, you know, have them stand out as characters.
As strong female characters and just strong characters in general.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. So curious, what was your beginning of your career like? Did you from an early age know that you were going to be destined for TV? Like, when did you start?
I actually started out as an actor. I wanted to be an actor, and I did stand-up comedy. Very not notable stand-up comedy back in New York. And started out acting and came out to Hollywood. And in my spare time, I was writing. And I had a lot of spare time. And I love to write, and I love to be able to kind of control my own destiny. So I started, what's the first thing I did when I was out here? I worked with improv companies and sketch companies, and then an executive producer named Brandon Tartikoff saw me in a show and hired me to write my first pilot. So that's kind of my first.
I remember that name.
Leaping off point. There was a show called The Dysfunctional Show that was basically a send-up of the talk shows of that time, like Phil Donahue and Oprah, and it was a live show and would have different guests in it, like Jason Alexander was in it. You'd get a lot of different comedians in it. And someone saw me and a couple of other people in it and brought us in to write a pilot, which was shot and never saw the light of day. So that was a beginning.
And then looking at your IMDb, I'm noticing, you know, you're on shows, Good Girls Don't, Love, Inc., Blue Collar TV. What were those early shows like as you're kind of learning the craft and cutting your teeth in writing?
I was shocked when I was first on a staff. I had no idea how anything worked. I didn't know about the hierarchy in the room of people who'd been doing it longer than I had. I was incredibly naive, and I came in. I think for Good Girls Don't, which was one of my first jobs, it was, Rude Awakening, which was on Showtime a long time ago with Sherilyn Fenn and Lynn Redgrave, sort of a show before its time. And I came in just really overprepared, very kind of Tracy Flick with a lot of folders and notes on the characters and story ideas. I was very overprepared, which it turned out was a good thing because they were kind of hoping for some fresh blood to bring in some new ideas. And that's where I kind of learned how it all worked. And I got to be on set and just really absorb the process because I had just come into it thinking I just want to write fun stories and write jokes. But there is more to it than that. There's a kind of a social element to the room. And a way that different showrunners break stories. And with each different show you do, you have to learn kind of a different way of doing things depending on the showrunner. So my first job, I was trying to listen more than I talked, which was a successful way to be a staff writer, I think, is absorb as much as you can and speak when you have something important to say, which is not often in my case.
Is there anything else that you learned from that early work? Anything else that you want to say before we move on?
No, I think that I've been very lucky to, in my career, have showrunners and mentors that gave me a chance to learn many different things. Sometimes you're in a room as a staff writer when you're starting out and you just are in the room where they put you in a different room to just come up with jokes. But I had showrunners that really let me learn kind of how to produce, how to write, how to interact with the actors. I feel very, very lucky about that.
You and Hillary Winston both were on Blue Collar TV. Were you on the show at the same time?
We weren't. I think she was on after. Blue Collar TV was a very strange experience. I didn't necessarily agree politically with the people I was writing for. But what was wonderful about that show is I got to go to Atlanta and produce a sketch comedy show for a very different audience than I was used to. And see what they responded to and what they didn't respond to. And the Blue Collar TV guys are like rock stars down there. So it was really fascinating to see the response that they got. I mean, we were in a huge kind of huge sort of amphitheater, and the audience was allowed to drink. And we're doing these sketches, and a lot of the sketches kind of fell on deaf ears because we were writing them for things that sort of amused us as opposed to thinking what their specific audience was. So that was really interesting. And I loved writing sketches. I think writing sketches is just so much fun. So it was a very rewarding experience and very, very eye-opening for me.
I just talked to Craig Kikowski yesterday, mm-hmm. and we were talking improv. Do you have a background in improv at all?
I did improv. I wouldn't say I was the best at it. I did it a long, long time ago. I am, after working on AP Bio, one thing that's really interesting about AP Bio is the Mike O'Brien and a lot of the writers in the room and a lot of the actors come from an improv background. And so the room was very different there. They approached the writing with that kind of improv, yes, and like there was never a bad idea. So it was a very safe place to pitch jokes and try strange things. I think an improv background for anyone, for an actor, but also for writers is incredibly, incredibly valuable. So I do have a little bit of a background, but I I was not the best at it for sure.
Andy talked about having a background in, you know, because he went and took improv classes, and he talked about it being how he understood how to build a joke, how to write these things. You said you like writing sketches. Is it because it's more compact, where you can kind of set it up and knock it down?
Or yes. Yes, and you can, it's just, you can develop really weird characters. You can do strange things. You can... It is a good way to learn, especially writing for, you know, if you're writing for a sitcom, how to build a scene, how to build jokes, how to have a beginning, middle, and an end, or make the decision not to do that. It's just really satisfying. And in terms of blue collar TV, it was fun to just create weird characters and make these, you know, these guys do them. So, yeah, it's just satisfying, and you don't have time to really get bored because they're short snippets, you know? It's not, when a sketch drags on, it's a really miserable thing because the movement of a sketch, you know, you can move really fast because it's such a short contained time. So a draggy sketch is really the worst, as we know from sometimes on SNL.
Yes, I was thinking about SNL, like there's some of those that are really good and there's some right before the last break.
Yes, and you're like, just stop it here, don't keep going. And then it goes for another, you know, 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's miserable. When something's not working, it's nice to just say cut and move on.
If they could have 30 minutes of dead air at the end, and sometimes that would be better.
Yes,
indeed. That would be preferred.
Yes, indeed.
Well, did this help you with your early experience on Community, the sketch writing?
Not necessarily. I mean, it all helps. It all, the more different things you can do to strengthen your voice. I do definitely think that acting and performing and doing comedy certainly helps in your writing, because you know if there's a line that you wouldn't want to say as an actor, or a joke that you can't say and make work, you don't want to put that in an actor's mouth. So definitely a background of acting I would recommend to any writer who wants to write in television or for anything. Take an acting class or take a comedy class and just feel what that feels like. It's very, very helpful to me when I'm writing, because I can say it out loud and act it and see if it can work.
You get to imagine how it goes in the room or how it's seen. Is that the advantage?
Yes. On AP Bio, I can't remember if we did this on Community, but on AP Bio, we read all the scripts aloud. As soon as a draft came in, we would read it aloud to see what made us laugh, what worked, what didn't. We would do that in the room before it ever went to the actors.
Yeah, I've seen where it seemed to happen more early than later on Community, where they had a full table read at the beginning of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And had it less and less as the season went on.
Well, it depends. I mean, I was there season 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. So we always did a table read unless the draft wasn't ready, in which case sometimes pages were just coming down to the actors as they were on set about to perform and they had no script. But for the most part, we did a table read. And... you know, that's a skill set too. Some of the actors were better at doing a table read and could really sell something, and some needed to sit with the script before they could really sell something. So that was interesting too.
In those 2 years, how did the writing room evolve over that while you were there?
How did the writing room evolve? Well, when I got there, there were a bunch of people who were leaving. Liz Kakowski was going. Who else was going? So I came in and Chris McKenna came in to kind of finish up the season. And It was the same staff for pretty much for one and two. I think season two, Megan Gans came in and Adam County came in. Some fresh young blood. Hmm.
And Andy, not...
Oh, Andy Barrow, my work husband, of course. Yeah. And when you first come into Community, it's kind of a it's a rite of passage, trial by fire. It's the way the room was run was a little unorthodox and crazy, and you never really knew what to expect. So you sort of just had to jump in and sink or swim, which we did. We sank and we swam.
You mostly swam.
Yeah.
At
3 in the morning, I don't know that I was swimming. But yes, we swam some of the time. We slept some of the time. We wept some of the time. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about maybe some of those differences? So, what is it like to write for Dan? What is it like to be in that room, as you came in halfway or part of the way through?
It was very interesting because Dan is someone who, and I don't throw the word brilliant around a lot, he's really a brilliant guy. He's really funny and his brain works like nobody else's. So that's a wonderful thing to be in a room with, someone who not only is super, super intelligent, but is really funny and entertaining. That skill set is very different from knowing how to run a TV show and manage people. That was not Dan's strength, I think he would tell you as well. So it was not run like a traditional, you kind of never knew what you were going to be doing or how he would want to work, if he wanted to be in a room with a lot of writers, if he wanted to pull a few writers, if he wanted to sit on the floor and just shoot joke ideas back and forth. He was very, in some ways he was your withholding father. So because he was brilliant, you really wanted to please him, but that's also a very intimidating kind of person to be around. And you worry if you don't say the most brilliant thing that you should be quiet. So in that way, it's not always a safe space in that when you really want to impress someone and when you want to rise to a level of something, maybe you're not throwing out terrible ideas that might actually lead to a great idea. And for me, I think the most important thing in a writer's room is to have that safety where there are no bad ideas. There are ideas you're probably not going to use, but maybe your bad idea will lead to someone else's good idea. So I think coming into that situation, a lot of people were a little thrown off, not sure, when it was okay to pitch something or try something, or should you be keeping something to yourself? Everyone was a little on edge in that way, I remember. But also there were days that were just hilarious and super fun. I mean, it's such a wonderful, we had so many characters to play with and you could have so many crazy ideas and little nuggets of ideas spark something wonderful. And so it was kind of the best of times and the worst of times, starting out there.
Now, do you get to know the other writers well?
Barry, you're in the trenches with them. Literally. I mean, the hours were very, very long and you're spending a lot of time in the same room with people and you're learning about their histories and their home lives and their, aspirations and fuck ups and, what shitty junk food is their favorite. And, we had a bathroom in one of the rooms and people would go in and use a bathroom when you're in a writer's room. Like someone would walk in to the bathroom and you're like, I don't need to see or hear that. And yet I am, while I'm trying to be creative, there is someone taking a giant shit in the other room. So yes, you learn people's smells and you know their voices and you know what irks them. And I mean, any people that you're with for the amount of time we were together do get to know each other quite well. And it was a great group, an absolutely great group. Everyone was so funny and interesting and different. And, Dan really loves the creative process and really loves writers and has an enormous amount of respect for writers and creativity. time is a different thing. I don't know how much respect for people's time or families, but creatively, he just loved the creative process.
Were you married? Did you have kids at all during this?
Oh, yes. Yes. I had two little ones. And I would, you know, sometimes be coming home as they were getting ready to go to school in the morning. Yes. I think Andy Bobrow and I were the only two that had kids. It was sort of a foreign concept, I think, to Dan at the time to be married and have kids. So, which is good though, because we brought something, I think, to Shirley and, you know, someone who is the character of Shirley raising kids. We actually had, you know, a little experience in that area.
Yeah, that's great.
No, good. Cause that's one of my favorite parts that you don't catch early in the series, but you do get it later in season one and in season two, that she has a life somewhere else.
Yeah.
And she sees people differently all the time.
Yes.
Because she's a caretaker.
Yes. She's maternal.
Yes. Very much so.
My son, who is 13. Is he 13? I've now forgotten my son's age. He is 12 and he is watching Community for the first time. And it's been just so great to watch it with him and see what tickles him and what he understood and didn't understand. And he just really, really loves it. So hearing him giggle while he watches something that I've written or a show that I've worked on has been really terrific.
See, do you have moments where you have to say things like, all right, now Yo Gabba Gabba was this and iCarly was this, because he's 13. He probably missed those things.
Yes, he did. He did. There are a lot of references that he'll say, what does that mean? There are, you know, some sexual references. He'll ask me what it means. But for the most part, he just loves the characters. He really loves the characters and has very strong opinions about which episodes work and which don't, which seasons work and which don't. We just finished season 4, so we're starting on season 5 tonight. Because I hadn't seen season 4, and I'd seen most of season 3, but I had also missed a lot of 5 and 6 too. So I'm excited I get to go back and see how everything wrapped up.
Yeah. Did you haven't watched the finale?
The actual finale, I haven't. I haven't. I'm ashamed to say I haven't. So, and I don't know anything. So don't tell me. I know little bits and pieces.
I'll keep it to myself. But I saw you had an interview back in 2015 where you hadn't seen season 6, and I was thinking,
yeah, you know, I don't know why I missed a lot. I think I was working on other jobs, and I just kind of floated away and sort of didn't think about it. And now I'm kind of glad I did, because I'm really watching the show now, kind of from a distance. I don't have a dog or horse in the race, and so I'm watching it anew, which is great. I'm like a fan now, you know, as opposed to someone who, even in my own episode, sometimes I'll watch them and go, oh, that's so great, oh, that's so funny, and I, you know, am feeling sort of separate from it, which is a really interesting way to watch something that once you were so enmeshed in.
We've heard this a lot the last 6 to 9 months, and I agree with you. The idea of seeing it, particularly when you're watching with your kid who hasn't seen any of it,
and
you get to watch it with them and get to see it, you get their reaction to go on top of it.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's a completely different experience.
It is.
I'm curious, what did your son think of season 4?
Well, we both thought the same thing of season 4, and I have a lot of friends that worked on season 4 who are incredibly talented. I'm a big fan of any show having a distinct voice to it and having letting artists and writers not have too many cooks in the kitchen. And I think that's one of the things that was great about Dan, difficult for people working with him, but great about Dan is he did not compromise. He wanted things to be a certain way, and that's how they were going to be. And so, like it or hate it, you're getting a clear voice. And I think what happened in season 4 through, you know, nobody's fault, is it just felt slightly different. You just felt that voice was missing. So a lot of the episodes just felt like gags for gags' sake. They weren't really coming out of, you know, the brain of the person who created it. So, you know, there were some good things in it, and then some episodes that I thought felt very flat, and my son felt this exact same thing without me even mentioning any of it. I said, this is a season Dan wasn't here, and some different writers took it, and that's all I said. And he said it was not his favorite season.
Oh, okay, but the better question is, what did he think of Modern Warfare?
He loved Modern Warfare. He really, really did. And I loved it. And I'm not saying, I mean, this is not an ego thing. I sat back and I was like, well, that's just a really fun, you know, 25 minutes of television. There's so many great things in it. And it was exciting and really fun to be on set for that. And everybody was so excited about it, the actors and everything. It was just a really great time. He really loved that episode.
Not 25 minutes. It's like 22 tops.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to fit that in. It's tough. And I so much got in there, and it felt like a good story was told, with some emotional stakes in there for Britta and Jeff. Mm-hmm. It was really fun bit of television.
Do you remember writing it at all?
I do remember writing it. I remember sitting on the floor in one of the writer's rooms with Dan while we talked about all kinds of different tropes and thoughts we had, and, you know, making sure the episode was grounded in something from the characters happening with Britta and Jeff. And I remember kind of being sent to set going, what is this going to be? What's going to happen? Is this going to work? And, you know, Justin Lin is here. And I think the first thing we shot was the campus having been destroyed, like a big wide shot of the campus. And I was holy crap. Like, I'm like, we're a half hour TV show. This is great. Yeah, it was really, really fun.
All right. I'm going to inject here. Sure. Modern Warfare is the reason I started watching Community.
Oh.
I did not. That was the hook. I did not know anything about it. And then basically the entire world around Modern Warfare exploded, where everybody was talking about Modern Warfare for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I caught that coming around. I'm like, what are you people talking about? Warfare sounds bad. But it was a TV show, and I went and watched it, and that was my hook. And then I was catching up from there forward.
Yeah. I mean, I love the concept episodes. There are some of them that I just think are so brilliant and so beautiful. But I also, for me, the heart of the show is those characters sitting in that study room around that table. So there are some smaller episodes that I thought were just as wonderful as Modern Warfare. Modern Warfare was a big splashy one, so it got attention. But some of the smaller episodes, where it's just the characters and no bells or whistles, I love equally.
Do you still have your "It's All Downhill From Here" sweatshirt?
I have so many. I'm finding all my my old swag from Community. I have an E Pluribus Anus jacket, and I have a bunch of interesting things from Community, and I'm keeping them. I love them. I have my paintball gun that Dan gave us all after season one, which is like a framed paintball gun. And each of us, there's a photo of, no, maybe it's season two.
Season two.
Yeah. And we all have these framed paintball guns and a photo of us and our story, our kind of Western story. I would think I was Ma Cutler, and Dan made them for us, and it was a great gift. That was I've got that on my wall.
Did you have a favorite part from that episode that's yours, you just really like about it?
From which one? From Modern Warfare?
Modern Warfare, yeah.
Oh, God, I love Garrett in that episode, and I love Leonard in that episode, and I love... you know, the moment that my son liked the most that I think is brilliant, and I take no credit for it, it was all Dan, is the moment where Chang enters the study room and he's got the two guns blazing at the very end and the music plays. That's a favorite moment, but I take no real credit for that. I like the Jeff and Britta. You know, I don't have a specific moment from that. I was both part of it and a spectator for it. I loved when the bullet flies in the study room, and I love the explosion of paint as Jeff is jumping out of the room. I mean, all that Justin Lin stuff, to be able to do that on a TV show, was just fantastic.
Mm. I know you've seen the the scene they reshot where they animated it. Have you seen that?
I have. I think I saw it. Did I see it on your podcast?
Probably. Well, you saw it.
I mean, not
Twitter
podcast
feed.
On your yeah. on your on yeah. Twitter. Yes, I did see it. I love all that stuff. I think
and
all
the
that
paintball game.
It's amazing.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible what people did, like, fan art wise. And, you know, what's great is that now that Community is airing again, it's got a whole new audience. So I hear from new people who are experiencing it for the first time, which is really nice.
Yeah, I see somebody nearly every day who's talking about they either just found it or they just finished it for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's fabulous.
And it holds up. I mean, a lot of it really holds up because sometimes you'll see a TV show years later and say, oh, it's sort of dated. It kind of doesn't work. But because at the core of the show, it's about these people kind of forming this bond and this family, it's sort of timeless in that way.
Mm-hmm. And there are 13 Community podcasts.
Are there?
I'm not joking.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Well, it's closer to 15. But yes, that is completely true.
That's yeah. good. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an excellent sign. It's a lot to. I listen to everybody's because I share them, and it takes a lot of time. But they love the show, and they're doing it for themselves. For the most part, everybody's just doing it because they love the show.
That's
and
great.
That is there's no greater testament, I think, to its the whole of it.
Oh, I'm glad. That's great.
And how many people participate in that?
And there's a lot of, you know, I say that, you know, as a joke, but what's amazing is the different perspectives that are in each one of the podcasts. You know,
absolutely. They are as friendly and nice together as you would imagine they would be horrible to each other, constantly looking for opportunity. They are the absolute opposite.
Because everyone's sharing something that they're excited about. That's great.
And they share when something happens and when anything happens, they can share with other participants. They do. I mean, it's been real. Like Alex has been really great about getting other podcasters on to talk to cast and other writers. I think he had Jen on for Ken Jeong. Mm-hmm. And he's had other whole podcasts where he's gone on to theirs. I mean, they've been excellent.
That's great. I love that.
Speaking of family, let's go to the one that's in italics. That's the Contemporary American Poultry is the first homage episode of Community. Mm-hmm. Was that scary for you and Carrie to write?
Yes. I mean, it went through a lot of different incarnations. It didn't start out that way. It became that kind of as we were working on it. The chicken fingers idea, the chicken fingers idea really, I think, came from Carrie talking about an actual thing. I mean, talking about how wonderful a chicken finger is and it sort of just evolved and then later became more about Abed trying to connect with people and then became more of a Goodfellas type thing. And Goodfellas, of course, is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I've watched it I could probably recite it to you now. No, I mean, not any more intimidating than writing any episode for that show, because when you love a show and you're really invested in it, every episode is kind of like you want it to be fantastic and exciting. And you also are confident. We always knew that, you know, Dan had such a clear vision for everything that he was there to support whatever we were writing. And so, no, I don't think it was intimidating. It was fun to write with someone else, too. That was
yeah,
really...
I think this is the only one where you have somebody else.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a good time.
It's one of the great episodes that I always point to. It's like, okay, if you want to see what they're capable of in season one, what really I think of as like the platform episode for all the other homage episodes.
Yes.
I point them to Contemporary American Poultry. It's like they can do this crazy thing because they have proven they could do it right here. And it's just well voiced. I love the structure. Is there anything specific about the episode you remember that you really enjoyed or appreciated?
Well, look, anyone who's had a really superior chicken finger knows that it is worth fighting for. A really superior one, not a mediocre one, but a really great chicken finger is kind of a day changer and a game changer. So I completely buy. It made perfect sense to me that that would be, you know, a currency at Greendale and something that everyone would be fighting over it. So in that way, it felt very grounded to me and real.
Nobody's eaten in a cafeteria more than once does not know the one thing they do perfectly.
Yes, of course. And a chicken finger is just, you know, it's a little delight. It's a little nugget of delight. So again, you know, grounding the episodes, when the episodes come from a real place, and the characters, there's something going on between the characters that's grounded and real, I think you can go as fanciful with the rest of the episode as you want, because you do have a bit of it that's kind of tethering you to reality. So in that episode, it was, you know, Abed trying to kind of reach other people and feel understood. And suddenly within this structure, he felt like people could get him and understand him, and he knew how to relate to people. And then also just the idea of your currency at your shitty school being a chicken finger, which I love and buy 100%.
No, it's fabulous. Do you find that when you were writing these episodes, like Modern Warfare and Contemporary American Poultry, are they ultimately easier or harder to write than something like Competitive Wine Tasting? We're like, okay, we need to write this episode, and we need to use the same set as the previous episode.
Yes, because you do have a structure. I mean, you know, you have the structure. You're following the structure of some other, you know, good piece of writing, or in some cases not good, but you know, Modern Warfare, we had so many things to pull from, and it's the same with the chicken finger episode with poultry. Is, you know, you're pulling from a structure and a story that you know worked. So I think it's not as hard. I mean, you want to make it special and you want to make it different. That's the challenge, is you want to make it your own. And while you're still spoofing things and borrowing things, you want to make sure that it's Greendale and that it's Community. And that's where the challenge comes in, I think.
Okay. Did you ever read Stephen Tobolowsky? I hope I'm saying that correctly. What he wrote about being on Community after that?
He did. He had just had a heart attack. And
yes.
I'm just in love with him. I think he's absolutely hilarious. And that episode, Contemporary Wine Tasting, was not my favorite episode, because we had three stories and they all kind of were truncated. I would like to have explored each one more and really get into it. But I thought he was so wonderful as the teacher of that class. He was so joyful. And yes, I read that he wrote something like it. Do you know the quote? Did he say something like it was so wonderful after having a heart attack?
He said that, you know, he had open heart surgery literally the month before shooting, and that he tells y'all, and he says specifically, I spoke to Emily Cutler about this, and she said, we've got it. We'll make a plan for you to sit more. And so he basically, all of his shooting was done in one day.
Yeah.
And that Danny was helpful. Chevy Chase was nice to him.
What?
I know. He describes Chevy Chase hugged him.
Yes. You know, Chevy had his moments of normalcy. He did. I know he's painted as a villain, and believe me, that is not unjustified. But he did have his moments of being slightly sane. I mean, they few and far between, but he had them.
Yeah, he talked about that. He talked about catching up and talking to Yvette. He talked about the other people he worked with there that he got to spend time with. And he still, by the way, when I tag him in something and I say something about, you know, the show, it's always the same response. He goes, I love those people. He goes,
that was.
Yeah,
that was,
he's such a pro. I mean, the guy is such a pro. There's nothing you can hand him that he can't do and won't take completely seriously. And I just thought he was hilarious and wonderful in that part. I hope I work with him again. He's just terrific.
Yeah, he's Ned Ryerson.
Ned Ryerson. Oh, yes. Yes.
From Groundhog Day. But no, he's such a consistent performer. Yeah. He's such a consistent, and he's so capable. So
great. And really, really funny and really subtle and, you know, takes something and just makes it better. So it was great. I feel so grateful to work with him.
No, he was grateful back. I thought that was, you know, you hear so many bad things about the writer's room and being on set about how difficult it is and how the long hours are. But then you have Tobolowsky come out and say, these people were excellent to me.
Yeah.
And him being, you know, outsider to the rest of the group and being treated that way, I just think that, you know, what you were ultimately doing was trying to do something really special, and it, you didn't grind people up in the process.
No.
It was for something. So I read that thing probably about once a year because it comes out with the fandom, and it's just lovely.
Oh, I'm so glad.
We mentioned it earlier in the conversation, you know, when we were first getting started, but I'm curious about, you know, how you viewed, and what was your, how did you feel? What was your personal responsibility to the female characters on the show?
You know, again, to give Dan credit, you know, that was a female heavy writer's room. I mean, it was pretty equal, and, I think that, and everyone contributed, and that carried over into the characters of the show. It wasn't so much feeling responsible for the female characters as making sure that every character had a distinct voice. You never want to look on a page and feel like the dialogue could be said by anyone. You want to know who's talking and what their viewpoint is, and have that be very specific. And I think we all took care, and we love the characters. They're all really fun, and they all did have a strong point of view. I know that before I got there, I think Hillary Winston was very important to making sure that the voices of the females were very distinct and very real and, you know, relatable in their way. By the time that I got there, they had personalities, so my job was easier because I could just sort of continue what had already been laid down.
Sure.
But it makes it much easier to write something when you know the point of view of the character, and when you can say, oh, the character wouldn't say that, or, you know, this should be in this person's mouth clearly. The more defined that the characters are from the beginning, it just makes it much easier for the writer to come in. Like, you'd know what was a Troy line and what was an Abed line and what wasn't. So a lot of the hard work was done, I think, before I got there, to give credit where credit is due.
Did that help you with something like accounting for lawyers, where the characters are, you know, they're being exposed to Jeff's lawyer colleagues, and then they kind of spin out where Pierce says you can hunt men on this island for sport?
Well, that episode was actually very challenging, because that was the first time we started to kind of go off campus and we were exploring Jeff's origin story. So that was kind of dipping our toe in the water of what are these people's lives like? What is their history? What is their past? So, that was challenging. That was a challenging episode. Since you asked me earlier, I think that was the first one where it was like, oh, we better, you know, tread lightly here, because this is something new that we're exploring.
It was handled really well.
Yeah, it was a fun episode. It was a fun episode. I liked Rob Corddry is great. He's just so perfect at playing, you know, someone really smarmy. Sleazy and
he could do smarmy or the drop
smarmy
of a hat.
Just it's his wheelhouse. He's found his thing, and he's just lovely. That was great. And Drew Carey was there. He was lovely. Everyone was just happy to be there and had a fine time.
Yeah, I noticed on IMDb that's like one of the few pictures of you with from the set is with you and Drew and
Rob. Yeah, with Drew with the hole in his hand. Yeah.
Yes, that was such a great joke.
It's just ridiculous.
It's such a perfect joke.
It's great when you work on a show where the things that make you laugh, it's your sense of humor. I've worked on many shows where, you know, you write it and it's fine and you're having fun, but it wouldn't necessarily be something that would tickle you and make you giggle necessarily. And this, writing for Community, was just, you know, you got to giggle and be silly, and
that,
it's wonderful.
That ridiculous popping sound when they...
Oh, the popping sound is great. Yes. It is so great. I also like when I was a sucker for when Chevy would do physical humor. I forget that Chevy was such a great physical comedian.
Yeah.
So when he just knocks over the champagne glass, it's just like a small, stupid moment. It's just very, gave me great pleasure.
No, it's when he did physical comedy, he was right. He's really quite capable of making yes. something like that look funny.
There are moments of Chevy where you'd go, oh my God, it's Chevy Chase. Like you'd remember yeah. and you'd go, oh, this is why. Oh, he's hilarious. You know, and then it would fade away. But those were great moments.
Is there anything else that stands out about your time on Community before we pop over to AP Bio?
Anything that stands out? It was a great group of people. It was a great group of actors. You know, each of the actors, and this is very rare on a show too. There's usually, and you know, this is Chevy notwithstanding, but the actors were a really, really kind, decent, open group of people. Really, really smart and really, really funny. As we can see, they've all gone on to do amazing things. And you don't get that very often. You don't get a cast that just gels and gets each other and is excited to do what they're doing, and nobody's a diva or causing huge problems. I mean, there are always problems, but not this. This group was just a great ensemble. And AP Bio as well. So I feel really lucky because you not every show is like that. So so that's what I would say about that experience.
You also get paid for naming Rob Corddry's character after your husband. So that's got to be an extra.
Yeah. Oh, you noticed that. You have done your homework.
No, yeah. I saw that. Well, I saw that. And I noticed that your brother-in-law also married an Emily after.
Yes. He copied my husband. Well, he saw my husband got such a good one that he wanted one for himself. So he got an Emily as well.
At dinner gatherings, do you require that she be referred to as Emily too, or?
There, well, it was kind of funny because in the writer's room, there was an assistant also named Dan. So we started calling the assistant Big Dick Dan. That's just reminded me of that. In answer to your question, there's Emily Light and Dark, and I think I'm the dark one. She's very blonde and I have dark hair, but we know what that's really about.
Well, when I did the research, I came across Patrick Duffy and Emily and Son open a bar, and I'm like, oh, and then I look at it, I'm like, oh, that's not Emily. That's yeah. somebody, that's another. And then I realized what happened.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, okay.
Everyone wants an Emily.
So how is AP Bio different from Community?
So different. So different. Yeah. What I love is that, again, amazing ensembles both. Both had a lead who kind of, you know, is egomaniacal and in desperate need of this family of friends that they assemble. Mm-hmm. So there are similarities in that way. Both have a certain attitude. Room was run very differently. Mike O'Brien... another just so funny, so talented, so strange and wonderful. Because he came from an improv background, the room was very open and every idea was heard. And there was a very diverse group of people. And kind of anything went, and the hours were a little different. It was a sort of calmer pace, but really equally satisfying. Because again, you have a really enthusiastic group of people, a kind group of people, and an ensemble who can handle anything that you throw at them and is just thrilled to be there. And it's another show that, you know, made me giggle and was not afraid to be silly, but also had really grounded moments. So to get two of those, I feel very, very lucky.
Yeah, I had watched the first two seasons of the show and absolutely loved it. I saw all the connections to Community, to AP Bio, and that's why I asked Matt. I said, hey, you know, would you want to do this, you know, rewatch podcast with me? I normally do an interview show, so doing a rewatch podcast is different for me. And I asked him, and first of all, he's a great question asker and so insightful. So that really helps. So I have to talk a whole lot less now. I mean, he never watched the show, so he's watching the show.
It's my fault it didn't get its regular seasons on NBC. I wasn't watching at the time. It's all me.
Yep.
Me and that Mr. Nelson.
It's you know, the tone of the show is very interesting and strange, and there you can see like how Community and AP Bio like are similar and then also have their own flavors to them.
Sure. Oh yeah.
But again, a cast of just, you know, heavy hitters where you can just sit back. I mean, a lot of times on set on AP Bio, you'd say to Paul LaPelle, who plays Helen, or to Patton Oswalt, just, you know, what do you think? Do your thing and improv and take a minute. And it's just hilarious. I mean, and working with Glenn Howerton was really, really a trip because I didn't know, you know, I'd seen It's Always Sunny and I was very familiar with him, but he's a Juilliard trained actor. He's like a real deal and so talented and so open. I love to watch him work. I love to watch him, you know, he'd suggest things. He's also a director in his own right and a writer. So that was a real treat, and watching just, you know, Patton and Glenn and Paula play off each other and play off the kids. It's like a dream come true.
How is it, what's it like coming into a show then as for the second season that's, you know, already established? I mean, I guess you did that a little bit.
Yeah.
You explained it a little bit. I'm asking this as a personal question from a, you know, someone who's trying to write and someone who's, not that I'm a writer, but I'm trying to find that balance between parody and writing something fresh. Does that make sense? Does that just come from like being a good, that's what makes good writers and everyone else hacks, perhaps, or it just takes time?
I think it takes time. You know, again, when someone creates a show where the voices are very distinct, it makes your job much easier. Coming up with the distinct voices, that's the hard part. That's when you're writing your own pilot and you're trying to make everything specific and every character come to life. So, you know, in both these situations, I came into something that was working and that was interesting. So all you can do then is, you know, try and carry out the showrunner's vision and also try and expand. Say, okay, we've established this. What else can we, how can we further expand this? How can we deepen it? How can we throw some twists into it? But the basic structure is there. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's helpful.
In the two episodes that you wrote, the specific ones you wrote, Toledo's Top 100 and The Sweet Low Road, Jack ends up being really selfless at the end, which is not his default setting. Default setting is completely selfish. Was that kind of the goal of those episodes, where Jack doesn't hog the credit for?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I think with both Jeff Winger and with Jack Griffin, you know, there is a soft side. There is a vulnerability. That's what they're covering up. That's all the false bravado. And sometimes seeing that reminds you, I think it really helps to see the vulnerabilities of a character who has that much ego, you know, so you can still relate to them and you don't hate them. And I think slowly in both those characters, their wall is broken down when they finally have this new love in their life and this family that has been created, you know, without them even really wanting it. So if you don't have those vulnerable moments with a character like that, you just hate him and you get tired of it.
So,
and I think, you know, we'll see what happens in the upcoming seasons. But yeah, he's slowly opening. Both those characters slowly opening. And then they'll go back to their old ways. You know, it's a few steps forward and a few steps back.
Oh, but sure. I do want to say maybe the hardest I've laughed in my entire life was when Eduardo and Victor are practicing kissing on each other's fists.
Jesus.
I love them. I love those friendships. And I mean, again, I go back to Abed and Troy. Like, some of the most popular things in these shows are these very, very sweet friendships between these guys. I find them both very, very touching.
No, I'm saying that as someone that may be the hardest I've ever laughed in my own whole life. And I saw Ghostbusters in a theater.
Well, that's great. That's a big compliment.
I could not get over it. I mean, it was awkward.
So awkward. That's the beauty of it, is so awkward.
It's, you know, how did this episode come about? How does you do a, you know, how do you say, oh, we need a top 100 of Toledo and Jack should be on it and he should be like 70 points below Durbin?
God, where did Toledo's top 100? You know, at the beginning of the season, we talked on AP Bio about a lot of different, like the writers would kind of all get together and throw out different ideas and different scenarios coming from all different. So we started from a place of many, many different kind of thoughts of where we'd want the characters to go and what we'd want to explore. And I think Jack coming second to Durbin, now that I think about it, actually in Community, I'm thinking about Contemporary Wine Tasting, which was Jeff coming in second to Pierce. And you know, when you put the egomaniac, you know, who thinks they're number one at everything, suddenly they're both coming in second to someone that they don't consider, you know, appropriate and above them. There is a similarity there, but I can't remember exactly where that specifically came from, but it, again, it all goes to making Jack vulnerable and making him have to look at his own ego. And also this friendship that he is unwillingly, you know, having with Durbin. There's, you know, he's slowly starting to actually care about this guy. That's pretty much where, I mean, all I can remember about that one.
No, I like that one. That was one of my, it's one of the better ones of season two. I have not seen all of season two yet. That's part of our thing. I have seen Sweet Low Road. This idea of Jack's job being, I'll tell you something. I didn't know how to take it at first because Community is very much stuck on the idea. An actual year is an actual year where, and then AP Bio, there is no time.
Yes.
Time does not really move. So Sweet Low Rose is this nice little, the problem is we're at the, you may lose your job because of this funding thing, which all public schools go through.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something that was really, is that part of one of those other pitches that just comes around, like it, top 100?
It is. I think in both AP Bio and Community, the idea of I want to get out of here and things are going to prevent me from getting out of here. I mean, that's kind of something that you play with just throughout the series is, you know, Jack wants to get out of his job, but does he? And sometimes something will be pushing him out and then something will pull him back in. That's just sort of a small engine of the show. And I don't know where AP Bio will go in the next couple of seasons and what we'll see happen to Jack. But those, it's funny. I mean, I don't think you really need to stick to time so much in these shows. I don't think anyone's going to go, but it's been a year of school and they've been there. You know, you just, you don't really care. You're kind of following.
No, I agree. I once I got used to the idea, it made it easier to just to say, okay, this is a day. This is a day, not the day, not the next day. It's a day. And it actually makes it easier to appreciate what's happening.
Yeah. And I mean, you do have in, you know, the good thing about in Community is, you know, it doesn't matter how old the students get. They can, I mean, obviously Pierce is still there, you know, they can be there forever. But in high school, your kids, the people playing your kids are going to get older. So you have to somehow address that.
Yeah. Some of them are 30 now.
So, yeah.
You know, go keep going, you know, hope it keeps going. But at some point, gray hair is going to creep into some of these kids' heads.
But what you can do is, I mean, you know, and I don't know if they will do it in AP Bio, you can always bring in new kids. You know, we love the kids that are there and they can take on maybe different roles, but you can always bring in, you know, or you can always find a reason why they're still sort of there. But just bringing in fresh blood, I think, helps that too.
And they've got this really nice touch of what they've been doing is they just call them by name like they've always been there.
Yes.
So they have a couple of kids that show up like, there's one that was actually there in like the pilot who's back in season two and has something to say, but they have other people, he just calls them by name like they've
just
always been there.
It's assume such that they've been there or that they've been out doing something and have returned. Yeah.
So it allows the audience to enjoy that joke.
Yes.
And let it, and you know, if you don't know the joke, it just keeps rolling. But if you know the joke, it's a bonus to the regular watch.
And sometimes Jack, the character, calls it out and is like, have you always been here? Like, who are you? Yeah. You know?
It's such a smart solution to that problem.
Yeah.
Because they've got such a big cast.
Well, I think we could keep on going, but I want to be sensitive to your schedule and time. We hit the hour mark. And so I want to just maybe wrap it up with, I like asking guests about their other projects that we as listeners, viewers should do as homework that we need to go watch, something that you're particularly proud of that we should go check out.
That I wrote?
Yeah.
That I'm proud of? Oh yeah. My God, that's... Well, I'm working on some things now that I'm proud of, but I don't know if or when they will actually make it to the air. I'm actually working on a project with a writer named Katie Greenway, who just keep that name in the back of your head, because I think she's going to be, a female version of Community or AP Bio, or she just has a very strong, specific voice. But it has all these same wonderful things that AP Bio and Community have in terms of humor and taking risks. And so that is something that's in development. And I am very much hoping that it will see the light of day, because it's really a worthy thing. Mm-hmm. And other than that, what am I working on? I'm working on my own stuff, and I'm working on raising my kids. I just finished on Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah.
And trying to launch my modeling career, hoping that's going to take off in the pandemic. And that's it. But I'll stay in touch with you and let you know if there's anything super exciting happening.
Awesome.
Please do. Yeah.
We always try to promote whatever anybody related to the family of Community people are doing, whatever
lovely.
They're doing. We try to make sure that people see it. And we're happy to do that. We love that.
That's great. Well, a lot of the Community writers are doing some really interesting shows and stuff right now, which I'm sure you're watching or familiar with. So I don't know. Have you watched Rick and Morty? Are you fans of?
Yes.
Is that your?
Yes.
Yeah. That's exciting to watch, too.
It's crazy and it's fun.
Yeah.
I do want to hear back when you finally watch the finale.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I will. I'm going slowly because I'm watching it with my son, but I will report back for sure.
Well, you're about like 26. You're into season 5, so you're 26 episodes away.
We're in a pandemic. I got lots of time to do that. So I'm doing like 4 or 5 episodes a night. So I'll get there soon.
Excellent. Well, Emily Cutler, thank you so much for being on 6 Seasons in a Podcast. You were a delight and just such a great perspective on the early years of Community. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Here. Super fun to talk about and reminisce.
And thanks for Matt for joining us for kind of a double episode of AP Bio Rewatch Podcast and 6 Seasons.
Happy to.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.